China is hosting its annual parliamentary meetings, the two sessions where its two major political bodies set the legislative agenda for the coming year in economy, military, trade, diplomacy, environment, and more. Arguably the most important political event of the year, the 10-day Congress wraps up today. Beijing, ahead of this year's event, announced it was scrapping its annual press conference led by the premier. What might that imply? For further insights into the event, we're now joined by Professor Kim Byung-joo of the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Good morning, Professor Kim.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Maybe you can help us a little bit here by providing the general background for the two sessions. We do talk about it annually, but maybe not so much in such details. Could you first begin by explaining what the two sessions meeting is, how it works, and of course, why it matters?
Yeah, it's called two sessions meeting because two conferences, gatherings take place almost simultaneously. Technically speaking, I mean, to be specific, not exactly the same date, because one began last Monday and then ending today, and then the other one began last Tuesday and then ending tomorrow. So it's not exactly the same date, but almost, right? Very much overlapping. The first gathering is called National People's Congress. We call it NPC in short form. And this is basically, if you look at a kind of like equivalent in the democratic system, it's kind of like legislative people's representation, just the common people represented. Mm-hmm. Of course, they are selected through the local organizations and everything. Mm. And it's about what, close to 3,000 people, 3,000 people coming to Beijing for this gathering for this National People's Congress. That's one. And by the way, let's be very clear. We know what sits on the top of Chinese politics officially, de facto, de jure. Communist Party is the supreme party. There's nothing above it, nothing equivalent, the same kind of level. Communist Party sits very much on the top. Mm. And these are all below Communist Party. So these are all controlled and managed by Communist Party. And they say it frankly. So under the leadership, quote unquote, leadership of Communist Party, these gatherings take place in NPC, National People's Congress, on one side. And then the other one is more of, well, they say NPC is not exactly, it's under the control of Communist Party, but it's not part of Communist Party. But the other one is kind of part of Communist Party. That's called CPCC, NPC, CPCC, lots of acronyms here. But CPCC stands for Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. Mm. So NPC is just more of close to pure representation of the people, 3,000 people. And then CPCC is more of the representation of the Communist Party through large number of people, CPPCC, Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. You said, because it kind of sounds really complicated, right?
A little bit.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is, we've been educated in democracy,
exactly.
So we're not familiar with this kind of complicated system that's controlled by Communist Party. You may just say, if Communist Party sits on the top, why doesn't it just do everything? Why do they bother?
Exactly. What does this actually represent? Because we know that the NPC is a rubber stamp national legislature, and they might have a political advisory body, which is, I'm assuming, is CPCC. If at large, it's just one supreme power, why do they need these different departments, if you will?
Right. So they maintain one party, supreme leadership of the party, Communist Party on the top. But to mix with it, they like to argue that we have these representations. For example, CPCC has, even though it's a Communist Party's body, CPCC, interestingly, this is really interesting concept. They, in CPCC, 2,000 representatives include actually representatives from parties other than Communist Party. China has 8 different political parties, actually, in addition to the Communist Party, but they're all under Communist Party's control and leadership. So they're not equal to Communist Party, but they have 8 different. I'm confusing you even further here.
Yes, absolutely.
I recognize it. But so these 8 minor political parties are represented to Chinese Communist Party, because CPP is supreme body. I guess that's enough for today anyway. So, but anyway, so CPC is NPC, National People's Congress, and Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference taking place together. NPC kind of represents the state, and CPCC represents the Communist Party itself. So,
Okay.
yeah,
That
that's enough for today,
that might be a
right?
good way to summarize it for our listeners, because otherwise I think we might need like a full lecture, and we're a
You're right.
2-hour show, Dr. Kim.
Fully agreed. Fully agreed. We'll revisit this thing again next time when possible. Okay.
Okay,
Yeah.
sounds great. Maybe we can move along to our second question today. So, what have been anticipated for this year's two sessions meeting? How were the expectations met and unmet? I do think the world was slightly surprised to hear Beijing's announcement that was scrapping this annual press conference led by the premier. What might that imply
Right.
too?
Actually, that last point about Premier's conference was something that we didn't exactly expect. There were lots of other things that were being expected. For instance, what's the projection for economic growth? IMF, for instance, predicted that China's this year economic growth will be below 5%. What will China say through this, two sessions in terms of their projection of economic growth numbers? I don't think we have anything set up firm yet. I think it will come out either today or tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. But that's still, economic growth projection is one. Along with it, in order to achieve that kind of economic growth, what is China going to do? For instance, are they going to go back to real estate market, trying to, boost construction, housing construction, or whatever? They've said it's not the best policy, but when the economy is slowing down, it's one of the things they might have to go back with other kind of side effects expected. So are they going to talk something about construction and real estate market or not? Another one is, so what are they going to say about defense spending? Will there be any kind of dramatic increase or not? So a lot of things were kind of like predicted and anticipated and everything. But the final results of it, we are still waiting for some of these numbers in closing days. NPC is closing today, and then CPPCC is closing tomorrow. So we still have some time left here for those numbers. But the surprises were two, I think, two major surprises. One smaller one was that this one was being anticipated. They were saying, who's going to be next chief of foreign policy, minister of foreign affairs? We had this Qin Gang affair when Qin Gang was appointed last year as a new foreign minister, and then he was stripped off. He kind of disappeared, and then Wang Yi came back, even though he's a senior figure, and he was promoted to join the party side of foreign policy making. As I said, again, Chinese Communist Party sits on the top of Chinese government. So Wang Yi, who spent 10 years, I think, as a foreign minister in the government, he was promoted to take a job in the party as the party's foreign policy chief. But he had to be brought back to the government to fill in. And so they were expecting this time the two sessions meeting. They were expecting announcement of the new foreign minister. It didn't come out, so it was a big surprise. And so Wang Yi actually conducted his own press conference once again. So one surprise, big surprise, bigger surprise was, you mentioned, a premier, China's prime minister. Xi Jinping is president, and then prime minister called premier is supposed to every time when they have this kind of conferences, they are supposed to give press conference, but this time it didn't happen. And so a lot of people were, just discussing what's happening. I mean, we knew last year when Xi Jinping, for the first time in the history, entered the third term, we knew it's no longer the system we used to have: president on one side, a political party, and then overall affairs of the country, but premier in charge of the government on the other hand. That kind of like a semi dual leadership system, we knew it was ending, but somehow I guess the world was expecting premier's press conference were yet once again taking place in order to explain some of the very important affairs and different issues and topics of the country and the government. But premier didn't have a press conference, so that was a There was a big surprise, and that they said signaled a new system once again under Xi Jinping's leadership.
I mean, we're talking about effectively scrapping a 30-year political tradition. It's typically televised, and then there's the conference led by the premier at the end of it. Of course, the big question going forward might be, could this imply Xi Jinping's tighter control? He's prioritizing security,
Absolutely.
clearly strengthening the ruling Communist Party's maybe grip over everything. That's a big question, isn't it?
Right, it is. And we knew that was happening last year, but if we go back to have a better idea what kind of this new system that's coming in is, before we are familiar with the old system, let's say that started from the 90s, let's say. Well, we know at the end of 80s, 89, we had a Tiananmen, and Deng Xiaoping came back big time as a senior and elder of the party, trying to kind of strengthen, tightening the grip of political control by Communist Party, like rejecting democratization. And from now on, this will be tightly under Communist Party leadership. There's no other challengers, whatever. And since then, under Deng's leadership, initiative, I won't say Deng's leadership, because Deng was already a senior elderly figure, and he tried to set up a new system, the post-Tiananmen system, that's supposed to be led by president and then prime minister hand in hand. Of course, president is higher, but prime minister is kind of like a junior partner, but kind of quite equal. So we know what happened. 1993, the first system was launched, and that's Jiang Zemin, right? You still remember his name, I hope. And then the other one was Hu Jintao, and then third one was Xi Jinping. And these people all sat in their position for 10 years. And then Xi Jinping, the big news came last year that Xi Jinping is going over and beyond 10 years. So that's why. So three generations of leadership: Jiang Zemin, Hu Jintao, Xi Jinping. And interestingly, these three figures actually represent three factions of the Chinese politics of the time that we remember, which Xi Jinping is trying to end. And Jiang Zemin, for instance, is from Shanghai Bang, Shanghai Clique, what they call one group. And then Hu Jintao is from the Chinese Communist Youth, Communist Youth Group is also a very politically strong faction, the second strongest at that time. And then Xi Jinping comes from the third group among the factional politics that's called Princeling, the second generation of the revolutionary. So they used to take turns in terms of presidential position. And then along with that, as I mentioned, under Jiang Zemin, let's say, for example, Li Peng was a premier. Li Peng, where some of us still remember their name. And also, Zhu Rongji was also premier, famous name as an economic policymaker. Zhu Rongji was in the post-Tiananmen era. He was one of the strongest advocate of kind of like market freedom and everything. So a very important figure. And then also under Hu Jintao, we remember Wen Jiabao. Wen Jiabao was kind of like a people's premier. When there was earthquake, he was the first person to be there, and visiting different parts of Korea, China, taking care of people's concerns and everything. So Wen Jiabao was a very important premier. And then for the last 10 years, we remember, of course, the one who passed away recently, Li Keqiang, was premier under Xi Jinping. Of course, with Xi Jinping, Li Keqiang's power, premier's power altogether had been dramatically reduced. We saw that happening. But this kind of dual partnership leadership had been the old system that we've seen before.
Maybe we can answer this question too. How do we explain Xi's deviation or departure from Deng's legacy?
There are different theories here, and one of the theories that's most popular in Korean media is Xi Jinping's own personal experience. Xi Jinping experienced Cultural Revolution under Mao Zedong as a young man, very, very young man. And he saw, Xi Jinping saw his father name is Xi Zhongxin, and then Xi Zhongxin is part of, he's one of the revolutionaries. He belongs to the, they say, first generation and second generation of the revolutionary, very senior leader, and number two, three person in the party, very top kind of leadership in the country. But Xi Zhongxin himself was prosecuted under the Cultural Revolution. He was terrible, terrible experience. I mean, he was beaten up in front of the people, and then Xi Jinping, as a young man, he was sent to the countryside. So Xi Jinping, as a young man, suffered great hardship, and suffered what do you call it, the violence of political power. And they say that experience actually gave him strong motivation to seek power. Some people say he has like two faces, basically. He's very good at presenting himself as a very nice guy, subservient and very respectful to elderly people in the process of rising to the power. Very so kind of he doesn't show his ambitions on the rise of or in the process of rising to the power. But once he got to that, the top, the peak of the power, he began to show his kind of, presence altogether. Kind of very interesting personality built based on his own sufferings during the young years. Another theory goes that Xi Jinping, when he came, this is a little bit more benign theory of it. When he came to power, he realized 10 years ago, the Chinese system faced a very serious issue of corruption. And he felt that he had to clean up the corruption. In doing so, for the last more than 10 years, he had to get rid of, remove a lot of powerful people altogether. To clean up the system. In doing so, he created enemies, as well as he produced incredible concentration of power for himself. Not power concentration as the primary objective, rather anti-corruption movement as the primary mover, they're saying. Because he needed to clean up the system, he had to accumulate a lot of power in the process. So there are two different major theories competing. There are other kind of theories, but this is still all speculation, though.
Professor Kim, I knew we would run out of time, but I do want to really get to our final question because I think it's an interesting take. Based on Mao experience, what can we say we see ahead for the post-Xi era?
Mao's experience and at the end, the Cultural Revolution and all this craziness, that's what Deng Xiaoping saw, and Deng Xiaoping himself suffered through that together with Xi Jinping's father, I guess. And so Deng Xiaoping was determined to create a system that will be more stable and long-lasting. That's why he introduced system of changing power maybe every 10 years among different factions, kind of balancing against one another. And that system was designed for long-term stability and kind of, the system kind of endurance in a way. The thing is, when one person rule comes back like this, just like Mao period, if Xi Jinping's one person rules gets fully established here, the real problem, according to experts, it's durability. They say, centralized system is extremely stable until it isn't, they say. They don't know what happened after Xi. And usually what happens is Xi Jinping and his associates, because they have so much concentration in their power in their hands, they're very afraid. Once it ends, what happens to them and to their offsprings and their people that they love? So they're going to try to stick to it to the very, very end. But because this is one person rule, there is no system to produce its successor. So nobody knows what happens. And then a lot of people see, based on our experience in history, is possibility of incredible instability. This system is supposed to be producing stability, but at the end of it, we're kind of bracing for incredible level of instability that we saw at the end of Mao's rule.
That might be the most disheartening thing you've told us. Instability, more instability. Because frankly speaking, there's a reason why the world keeps such close tabs on what's happening in China, the influence they might wield on the global economy, and more.
Exactly. Right. And I'll try to come up with more kind of promising and optimistic subject next week.
Thank you, Professor Kim. We appreciate it. Why do I have a feeling we might be talking about U.S. politics soon enough? And that doesn't really signal stability either. Thank you very much, Professor Kim. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you very much.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.